One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hi, welcome to Smosh Mouth. I'm Shane.
And I'm Amanda, and we have a very special guest with us today, Bob the Drag Queen. If you are not watching and listening, this is Bob's voice. Hey, Bob.
Hello, my name is Bob. I just do a weird voice. I am Bob. It's me, Bob the Drag Queen, yeah.
And also, we have Courtney. Courtney's here.
Well, yes.
Courtney is our special guest. So my name is Bob. I'm a member of Smosh Mouth Podcast. We're going to interview you about your book, your beautiful book, Harriet Tubman Live in Concert. No, I noticed you pinned it under my name, which is kind of crazy.
I had to have an alias, you know?
That's crazy.
I'm actually here because I was like, I must be here because I am a huge fan.
Oh, really?
Yes.
She's a huge fan. She busted in here. We were like, you can't come in.
Average size.
5'6". So.
I was at a party last... No, well, not a party. That's not true. I was at a benefit last night. And when I was there... I gotta say, it was the whitest night of my life. It was.
Wow.
And I gotta, honestly.
And this is the whitest day of your life.
No, you've had whiter days than this. Last night was, the show was Paul Schaefer.
Okay.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Okay. Very light.
Rufus Wainwright.
Yep. I love Rufus Wainwright.
Mm-hmm. Paula Poundstone.
Okay.
It was white.
Yeah,
it was like Crest White Strips white.
Sure.
Someone who I really admired growing up, Weird Al Yankovic, was there, and I really wanted a picture with him. So I was like, I had to be cool the whole day. I was like, yeah, Weird Al, you know, you're cool, you're a cool cat. All those instruments and those funny songs. Mm-hmm. And by the end, me and Melissa Villaseñor were standing outside.
We were both like,
we want a picture with Weird Al, but we don't want to like. We don't want to be fangirls, but we want a picture with Weird Al Yankovic. Like we're comedians. Come on.
Yeah.
And then Weird Al came out and we were like, I'm so sorry. Please. Weird Al, can I please have a picture with you? He was actually really, really cool about it.
Oh, good.
He seems cool. He seems sweet.
Cool cat. And one of my favorite things about him, I told him this too. One of my favorite bits of random trivia, I'll always name two artists and I'll say, who do you think has the most Grammys? These artists, I'll just name two random people, like, you know, Britney Spears and Janet Jackson. And then it's like, oh, who has the most? And then I always do the one that seems like an easy one is like Weird Al and Jennifer Lopez.
No, that doesn't seem easy.
Who has more than Weird Al and Jennifer Lopez? Who has more Grammys?
I would have guessed Weird Al.
Weird Al has 5 Grammys.
What?
J-Lo has 0.
Wait, how did I not know that?
Weird Al Yankovic has 5 Grammy Awards. He's one of the most Grammy Award winning comedians of all time.
Oh my God.
Why did I think J-Lo had at least one?
Not even. I think she's been nominated maybe 2 or 3 times. 0 wins.
Wow.
Weird Al, 5 of them things.
Weird Al is so nostalgic to me because we all listened to it.
Yeah.
We were all obsessed. His music videos were everything. Does he still have long hair?
Long hair.
That's crimpy.
Way long. I'm bald and considerably and considerably younger than Weird Al Yankovic, which feels like a curse. Mm-hmm. But he looks the exact same.
Incredible.
I will show you a picture of Weird Al.
Please show.
From last night, so you know this was recent.
We're going to see the pic.
And he looks like the exact same.
He's like in his 60s, right? Am I wrong?
He has not changed. You are psyched.
Oh, so. we'll put it on camera, right?
Yeah.
You are so happy.
It's like he slept in with, you know, braids. Like he has like 2 French braids. That's what his hair looks like.
Yeah.
It's like these beautiful curls. He looks exactly the same.
I don't know how he got there, but it was a really white night.
No.
That's amazing.
But I got to meet Weird Al. You ever had Smash Mouth here?
Huh?
No.
You ever had Smash Mouth here?
Well, he passed. He's the lead singer of Smash Mouth.
He did. He died
not that long ago. Bob, I'm so sorry.
Jesus. I mean, I wasn't like a huge fan, but I didn't know. I'm a fucking asshole for saying
I mean,
that.
No.
It was part of our lives.
Oh, my God. I mean.
Walking on the sun.
If you're a millennial.
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
Literally, Smash Mouth. We were thinking about Smash Mouth. We were like, oh, Smash Mouth. And then he died.
I've been told that I have a really distinctive voice.
You do.
I think you do.
Yes,
but it's not easy to imitate, though.
It's a little smoky and it like dips.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of peaks and valleys in my voice. But it's hard to imitate, but it is like, I feel like if you heard my voice behind you in like a Walgreens, you'd be like, is that Bob the Drag Queen?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Yeah.
I love it. And if you don't know who Bob the Drag Queen is somehow, you are season 8 winner of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
But also many awesome projects after.
Yeah, you may know me from RuPaul's Drag Race, mm-hmm. We're Here,
yeah.
The Traitors, Cherry Pop, Tales of the City.
Your own YouTube channel.
My own YouTube channel, my
Fortnite.
Fortnite, my podcast, Sibling Rivalry.
Yep.
I be in these streets.
That's what's crazy is like I feel like you've been able to dip into every type of art form almost at this point.
Well, the only thing I'm really super skilled at is stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I was gonna say being funny.
Yeah, and outside of that, I just really love doing a lot of things. Like I love to write music. Mm-hmm. I love to stream. I never saw myself as like a reality TV contestant, although I've been on several reality TV shows. I've been on Last Comic Standing. Mm-hmm. I've been on America's Got Talent. I've been on RuPaul's Drag Race, and I competed on The Traitors.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
So I've actually done 4 competition shows. I've only won one of them.
Listen, we can get into The Traitors.
It's not about, winning, though.
It's about winning.
There was issues there.
I think it's about being the most entertaining, and you were one of the most entertaining on Traitors.
Well, thank you. There was a rumor online that was like, Bob actually had somewhere to be, so he made himself obvious.
No.
I was like, no, guys, I really wanted to win. I thought I was doing a great... I genuinely think my game was great. There's people online who said that I was, quote-unquote, the worst traitor of all time.
Oh, like,
there are worse traitors than you, and we know who they are.
And we know it. I mean, I was the first traitor outed, but I got turned... Like, when I was... kicked off the show, episode 4 of season 3, which I think is the highest rated episode of the season. It's the highest viewed episode of the season.
That moment is the best.
Like, at the time it aired, it was the most viewed episode of The Traitors of all time.
Because it's so good.
But I was actually doing pretty good going under the radar. Everyone at home is always like, it's so obvious. Yeah, you're doing a test with all the answers in front of you.
Yeah.
You're literally sitting at home with all the answers, being like, how are they getting this wrong? Yeah, bitch, you're literally sitting at home. You know the answer to the test. The people in the castle did not know that I was a traitor until someone who absolutely knows a traitor, because he's also a traitor.
Right.
Yeah. Made it obvious. But he knew. And there was one guy, Dylan Efron, who kept trying to come for me, but no one ever believed him.
I saw. Yeah, it was hilarious. Your brother's not a good actor.
The line was, I grew up with an actor, to which I said, well, not a good one. Which I have nothing against Zac Efron.
You're entertaining.
Oh, man.
It was so awesome watching that exit, because as it was happening, I felt like you wanted to fight and keep playing, but you also were like, this is incredible television.
I was very, very proud of my exit. I did want to give a little nugget to bring down Boston Rob. I thought to myself, if I'm not going to win, he sure as hell isn't going to win. And you know what? He didn't win. I think it was 2 episodes later.
He was screwed.
He couldn't.
I think he messed up his game. Even he admitted on the reunion that he messed up his game by going for me.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Mm-hmm. We play games like that all the time here. Like, we play like werewolf and stuff.
You never invited me?
I know.
No. If you want to play werewolf
with us.
You are
busy.
Very busy woman.
You are busy.
Very busy woman.
But watching you.
But just so you know, when I play like Mafia, Werewolf, Blood on the Clock Tower, I'm very confrontational.
Okay.
But you need that. You need that. Because if you sit back too much, then all the heat's always going to be on you.
Yeah.
There's like a few people whenever we play werewolf who are like, and then like,
you're clearly a werewolf.
You're clearly the werewolf. Yeah. They're like, no, I'm not. And then they aren't. And you're like, why didn't you say anything?
I started doing a version called Witch Hunt where it's just because I do it on my Patreon with my patrons. We do it on Zoom.
Oh, fun.
And it's like, we are the town. I'm the mayor of the town. And then we got to find these witches. Like, these witches are like, they're killing us at an alarming rate, and we have to find who the witches are. And then the witches meet in the cauldron. And then I'm also the head mistress of the witches as well.
Yeah.
I know this. And it's like, I don't make any gameplay. I just, I'm just doing the bidding of my fellow witches in my coven. And then I wake up in the morning, I'm like, good morning, everyone. We survived last night. What a great night. We actually caught a witch, but we got to get these witches out of our town. I love playing these games, and I would love to come over and be a participant.
You would be
we would
so
love that.
Good.
Did y'all see when Lizzo did it, I think with like Kai Cenat? Lizzo played Mafia with Kai Cenat, and like a fight broke out.
Wow.
It can happen.
Which, over what?
I can't remember, but like Lizzo was like, this crazy. She's like, I have to get out of here. This is
people go hard on those games. Because you have to, like, if you really want to commit, especially it's like, because I hate being the werewolf, or like, I'm like, I want to just be a really good villager. But like, in order, and it's also more entertaining that way too.
I will attack your family members.
but your exit had me like watching, thinking when we play the games, I'm like, I always get pissed, right? It's impossible to not get pissed if you care about the game. But I was learning so much watching people like you and Boston Rob of like, okay, here's how you be entertaining while you're doing it, though. Like, I think it's going to shift my game after this. Like,
well, sometimes, no shade to my fellow castmates on The Traitor, but sometimes not being entertaining can really get you a long way. Like, Lord Ivor, I was mentioned in more episodes than Lord Ivor, and he won the show.
Like, what's going on with Lord Ivor? Like, he's like, hello, everybody, good morning.
Well, I do believe the tea is rather cold today, and I was wondering if anyone had chamomile or Earl Grey.
We're all like,
I think Dorinda, he's like, hey, my dear, there's a chip in this cup.
He was there.
He was there.
And his speech at the end was like, you know, I'm always in so much drama. I just don't want drama. I'm like, you're on Traitors.
Well, at one point he was like, I don't have the ability to lie. And I was like, what if when you were straight for like 35 years? I think you could.
I think
you do have the ability to lie, Lord Ivor.
Yeah, that's factual.
I couldn't possibly tell an untruth.
It would be that rather untruth.
I love every like participating like moment he'd have. He'd be like, "I think it's a girl. It must be one of the girls.
But at one point, he was like, "Well, we need rather strong men to sail on the boat to row." And I was like, "No shade. Are you a strong man?"
Handle that episode because I was like, stop sending these housewives to these fucking rafts where they're like, hey, when are we gonna get off?
I was like, if you want strong men to stay, no shade, honey, but Nikki Garcia is a world championship
wrestler.
Hall of Famer wrestler.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gabby Wendy was a NFL cheerleader, and you are a man in his 60s. Who is not in particularly great shape. So
Need strong men.
I feel like your season was very much like, it's got to be the girls. The girls are the ones.
That's what I'm saying.
It was two girls, to be fair.
They were wrong.
That is true. Damn.
Okay,
you know what? That is true.
Actually, it was three girls. Three out of the five trainers were girls. So in their defense.
That is fair.
And I hate when they used to gender the knocks. They really used to like, they'd be like, that's a girl knock. That's a boy knock.
I hated that. And it was always the opposite.
Whenever it was a big knock, they were like, that big gorilla man hand that Bob has.
And it's Britney. She's like,
they're like, that's got to be the King Kong of the castle. The drag queen. And I was like,
one of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th. And this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Also, your outfits were fucking incredible.
Thank you.
They were incredible, and I don't know if you can reveal this, but did you guys all have wardrobe and everything on there?
Like, you mean, do they provide it? What do you mean?
Did they provide it, or did you guys bring your own wardrobe?
No, we bring our own wardrobe. So I work with my stylist. Imagine if they gave me what they gave me and they just threw Lord Ivor in sweaters. Imagine if they were like, Bob the drag queen, a pink tuxedo with a pink kilt. Bob, are you like Argyle?
That's what I was wondering. I was like, because this isn't equal. This isn't.
Imagine they're like.
They just have a bunch of caps
and
for
Bob. And Rob, you're wearing a backwards hat, right?
Which you love.
And Lord Ivor, what, khakis? I'm thinking khakis. Now, Bob, think sequins.
Yeah, no, I got
it. I provided my own. We provided our own. Well, actually, fun fact, when we arrived, because, you know, they actually film in Scotland. It's not filmed on like a soundstage here at
that
LA.
That makes me happy.
You're actually, they will fly you to Scotland. It's not, no shade to the Highlands. It's not a beautiful part of Scotland for me.
For you.
I'm not a nature girl. I'm a city girl.
Right.
Okay. I like the city.
We love Edinburgh. It's gorgeous.
And you are in like the high grass. Every step you take, they're like, watch out for ticks. Every scene, watch out for ticks. There are ticks here.
I was going to say,
tons of ticks. Fear.
So you guys, because you guys, those were your own clothes. You guys were like wrapped up. Sometimes I feel like you guys were matching.
Well, on the challenge, they provide you with like a like sweatpants and stuff.
Right,
like
you
that.
Had like your competition
yeah,
wear.
Yeah, but thought, also like... I brought my own too. So there were moments where I had like my own cute little sweatpants and stuff that I
no, you looked
to wear.
Good all the time.
But they
time.
Wouldn't let us all wear hoodies because then it's kind of hard to tell who's who.
Sure.
So if everyone has a hoodie on and the shots from the back, you can't tell who's who.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there were times where it was so cold. Like, I need a hoodie. Like, mm-hmm. So you can have a sweater, mm-hmm. but you can't wear a hoodie. And I'm bald. I was like, if anyone needs to cover their head, there were a few of us who needed to cover our heads right. because it was just so fucking cold out there. But yeah, we provided our own clothes.
Wow.
What about makeup? Because since you do drag, did they have makeup artists there, or did you choose to do your own?
I didn't do any drag on the show. Right. I did some makeup.
I
just did my own makeup there. And for the most part, I usually do my own makeup, except for TV appearances. I have a makeup artist named Tyler Devlin who does my makeup for like big gigs. But I'm at like a college gig or like a theater show and it's not being filmed, I usually do my own makeup.
Nice.
And I was like, baby, let me tell you right now. I was like, honey, I am, because I'm not a diva, but I'm not not a diva. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not like that. I'm not that chill. But I was like, oh, well, when they called up, I was like, well, let me tell you right now, honey, I'm not doing this show unless I can bring my stylist and my makeup
yes.
artist. And you send that back to them and you tell them what I said. And they were like, no. And I was like, all right, I'll do it.
Stop.
Fair. Okay, cool.
I think it never hurts to ask, you know.
I was demanding. They were like, nah, we're good.
They're like, nah, we're good. You're like, fair, I'll be there.
Yeah, literally.
I'll still be there.
But like... I'll be complaining the whole time.
And that's fair, and you're valid in that. You've done so many different types of reality shows. We were talking about, like, you've been in all types of what would be considered, like, uncomfortable conversations or situations. Is there, like... anything that's out of your comfort zone, would you say at all? Because I feel like you're so comfortable going into anything at this point.
Well, I am uncomfortable, but I don't mind discomfort. I was talking to someone about me and my friend. I went through a real tattoo kick where I was getting, like, I have maybe like 16 tattoos, and I got them all like within like 2 years. I was like really into tattoos. And I had this one friend named Marty Gold Cummings. They were getting a tattoo on their ribs. These
very painful spot.
Yeah, these tattoos on their ribs. And they were like really. Like putting on a show, like really going on. And they kept being like, oh my God, like, how do you like do this? And I was like, they're like, doesn't it hurt? And I was like, yeah, it does hurt. It does hurt. To be clear, I am in pain, but I can really endure a lot. I can really suffer through, including with uncomfortable situations and awkward moments. I can really suffer through a lot of pain and awkwardness. And I also don't like, I prefer the awkwardness of confrontation to the awkwardness of small talk.
Sure.
I really
small
hate.
Talk is the death.
I hate small talk. I'm so bad at it. When I'm at parties, I'm like, so is your grandma dead or what?
I actually That's appreciate awesome. That so much because I think I'm an extroverted person, but I get overwhelmed when I'm going to parties because I'm like, who am I gonna get in a corner with, and they're gonna ask me, like, what do you do?
I hate it.
What
I
do you
hate
do?
It. They're like, what's your favorite color? I'm like, blue. My mom died last year. And also, there's this thing when you go to Hollywood party. Y'all been to these Hollywood parties with like celebrities and influencers and stuff?
Maybe like.
Don't you lie to me. This is a very popular podcast. There's no way I'm the most famous person you've met. Let's keep it a buck.
I don't know.
I'm at this party, and when I was at. Like Madonna's, I've been to Madonna's Oscar party like 3 years in a row.
Okay, yeah, well, you same. Do win
we've,
that.
We've been there.
You do win that.
But when I'm at these parties, I'm really bad with faces and names, especially like, because I don't actually watch that much movies and television.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
really watch competition reality television. So if it's a reality TV show like The Kardashians or any show like Housewives, if they're not competing for something, I don't watch it.
Mm.
Not saying it's not good. Kardashians might be the best show in the world. I literally have no clue. I've never seen an episode of it. But I just don't watch a lot of. The only TV show I watch is Severance.
Yeah,
he's obsessed with Severance.
Currently, I would also watch like Breaking Bad, and then like Fresh Prince of Bel Air, like old shows as well.
Yeah.
So I just don't watch a ton of TV. And when I'm at these parties and I meet people and I know they're famous because of how they look and how they're dressed, but I go up and I introduce myself. And because they're so famous, they think I know who they are. So I'm like, hi, my name is Bob. They're like, oh, hi. I'm like, okay, I'm a comedian, and I hosted Madonna's tour. That's why I'm here. And they go, oh, that's so cool. I'm like, bitch, what's your fucking name? What do you do?
When at a certain point of your fame do you just stop introducing yourself?
I think I found January Jones is one.
Wow.
I met January Jones. I didn't know who she was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I was at a party with Charlize Theron, and I was like, oh, my God, I love your dress. This is such a cute dress. She's like, thank you. And I was like, what's your name? She's like, January. I said, oh, my God, I've never met anyone named January. That's such a cool name. How do you know Charlize? We work together. Oh, are you like her lawyer, her accountant? She was like, no, we just work together on stuff. I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay, cards close to the chest,
so
I guess.
I'm a comedian. I do this. She goes, oh, my God, that's amazing. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm leaving now. And my boyfriend was like, that's January Jones. And I was like, who's January Jones? And he was like, she's a famous actor.
I will say, though, that name, it doesn't come up a lot. Like, I feel like if you were to say January Jones, because it took me a second, I was like, January Jones. Oh, yeah, Mad Men.
Or they do this thing where they act really modest. And I don't mind it. Like, I met someone the other day. They were fans of mine. But they're more famous than me. But they were fans of me. But I just didn't know who they were. And I can't even remember their names, but they came up to me and they were like, oh my God, Bob, we love you. I was like, oh my God, thank you. What are your names? They told me their names. I've already forgotten. But I was like, what do you guys do? And they were like, oh, we're just small actors. No one cares about us. We're just like shitty little Hollywood actors.
Holding
no one
their
knows.
Oscar. Oh, we're nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, they were on Euphoria.
Oh,
wow.
I love Euphoria.
I was like, come on, man.
Imposter syndrome?
I didn't watch Euphoria, but I've heard it's a really great show. One time I was at this other party. Okay, I'm going to move on. I was at a party, and you know Law Roach? He's a
yeah.
stylist.
Yeah.
Law
I
Roach.
Love Law Roach.
Several people in the room were just like,
Zendaya. He's Zendaya's main stylist. So and he was on, what's that competition
Legendary.
Show?
Zendaya
so,
from Euphoria.
So this is a Zendaya story. Is it Zendaya or Zendaya?
It's Zendaya.
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 So I was at the party. By the way, y'all, I need to make it clear to anyone listening or watching. This is not about Zendaya. This is not shade to Zendaya. I'm just stating facts. This is no critique of Ms. Daya.
Okay.
Okay. So we were at the party, and Zendaya had just won an Emmy. It was an Emmy party. It was an HBO Emmy party. I used to be on an HBO show for 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Law Roach. I was like, oh my God, Law Roach. Like, hey, girl, we were just chit chatting. He goes, oh my God, do you want to meet Zendaya? She had this giant line, a huge line of other celebrities who are literally waiting in line to congratulate her on her Emmy. And it was maybe like 15 people.
That's a lot.
She's just standing there holding an Emmy. I don't know if y'all, the Emmy might be the biggest award out of all, besides maybe Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gigantic award. And she's holding it. And there are these people lining up. And he goes, do you want to meet Zendaya? And I was like, I'm good.
Right.
And he was like, you know what I mean? And I was like, well, the truth is, I don't watch any shows she's on. I don't watch any movies. I've watched The Greatest Showman, and I watched the Spider-Man movie she was in. And I feel like there are people who just want to meet her a lot more than I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who would have something of substance to say. And I would just be like, hi, my name is Bob. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Goodbye.
Congratulations. But obviously, congrats on all her work. But the truth is, I don't watch Euphoria.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because I don't think I'm interested in watching a TV show about high schoolers fucking and doing drugs.
Now, granted,
the show is obviously very brilliant based on the reviews and the awards it has received.
It is a good show.
But I think I'm a little long in the tooth to be watching.
I have never heard that phrase.
Long in the tooth?
Yeah.
Oh, horses have, the only way to tell how old a horse is by how long the teeth are. Because horses are like Weird Al Yankovic.
Blowing my mind.
Horses don't
Back
age.
Back to Weird Al.
Yeah, like Weird Al. Horses don't age visibly unless you look at their teeth.
Yeah.
So you ever heard also the expression "never look the gift horse in the mouth"?
Yeah.
No.
So that expression is because if you get a horse as a gift and you're like, "How old is this horse? Let me look at its teeth."
Oh, okay.
So they're like, if someone gives you a horse, just take it. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Got it. Just take the horse and say thank you.
I always thought that was just like, you're gonna get bitten in the face.
Yeah. So anyway, I never watched Riverdale or any shows about high schoolers since I was like 23 or 24, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure Euphoria is great. I just never watched it. This is not a dig at Euphoria or Zendaya, but I was just like, I'm just gonna let other people who really want to meet her. It's nice to see her from a corner because she's quite stunning.
Yeah.
And incredibly talented.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to take up her time, you know?
I see that.
But the Weird Al Yankovic walks by.
I really wanted to meet
you. Well, that's like your, I don't know if it's your childhood, but like that matters.
Oh, for sure. When I found out that Samore, the comedian, Samore follows me on Instagram.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Baby, if I saw like Zendaya and some more together, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to go over to some more because mm-hmm. I love her comedy. If I see Adele Givens, these are the people like that, you know, I really love funny people. When people ask, who's your diva? For me, everyone's like, you know, Gaga, Beyonce. Right. I have a giant tattoo of Whoopi Goldberg on my arm.
Oh, yeah. My
like,
God.
Like, I have another tattoo of Carol Channing on my other arm.
Nice.
Like,
yeah. These are so good.
I love funny people.
Yeah.
Nice. You know?
Whoopi Goldberg is incredible. Her at the Oscars, I was like, woo.
She's amazing.
Yeah. She looks stunning.
You gotta tell me.
I relate to that, like, wanting to like talk to a specific person, because there was a while where I was going to a bunch of movie premieres, and I went to, there was one, it was Jennifer Lopez starring in it, and Ben Affleck
was
there.
Three-time Grammy loser Jennifer Lopez.
Yes. Our
official
girl.
Title.
Our
her God-given name.
But at the after party, I saw the guy who plays Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite.
Gang, gang.
And I was like, I have to say hello.
You're
and
like, J-Lo, move! Get out of the way! I'm talking to the guy who plays Uncle Rico.
So we're talking about all these things you've done. I mean, you are such a busy person. I feel like you're doing something every day. In the span of all this, and the reason you're here, is you wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
I hope you rest.
I'll rest when I'm dead.
All right.
Okay.
Great.
And it's not just like any book. It's not a book about your life. It's a novel. It's a story.
Yeah. So I was filming season one, episode one of We're Here. I was in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And my manager called me and was like, hey, we have a book deal offer for you. And I talked to them about it. And they were like, we want you to write a memoir. And I said to them, and everyone thinks I'm being modest. Everyone who knows me knows I'm not modest. I'm not a modest person. That being said, I don't think my life is interesting enough to write a book about. And that is because I don't really do anything crazy. I write jokes, I podcast, and then I go home and I go to sleep.
Like, your whole life is on camera.
It's already
like
on
people
camera.
Can watch.
It's all there.
Like, I'm not really doing any, I don't do drugs, I don't drink. I've been sober for 16 years.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
I've met some really interesting people, but like, everyone's like, oh my God, you work with Madonna. I'm like, yeah, I did, but like, I met Madonna when she was 64 years old and she was a mother of six. Like, what do you think we're doing? Like, lines of coke?
Yeah. No, you're hanging out in her living room.
We were like singing our songs, doing our dance, and then we would go back to my hotel room, she would go back to her palatial home, mansion. And then we would meet me back up tomorrow and do the same thing again. We weren't doing mm-hmm. anything crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the stories are like kind of interesting, but when you listen or read to like Viola Davis's autobiography or like Tina Turner's movie mm-hmm. or like these, like those are autobiographies.
Mm-hmm.
My story is just, it's not that interesting. I live a pretty boring life. So I said, I don't want to write a book. I said, I wouldn't read that book. Mm. I don't want to write a book I wouldn't read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't even pick up that book. I wouldn't even glance at that book. So I don't want to write that book. But I do love historical fiction. I had just finished reading The Good Lord Bird by, I think, James McBride. And it's a historical fiction piece about John Brown, the abolitionist.
Yeah.
And he kidnaps this formerly enslaved kid, and he mistakes him for a girl. And this little boy has to live as a girl for years.
Whoa.
For years. Whoa. He's afraid that John Brown will find out that he's a boy. John Brown was really religious, and he didn't want anything weird to happen, so he was like, yeah. And John Brown carried guns. He shot people, like, mm-hmm. all the time. So he was just like, okay, I'm a girl, and my name's Onion. That's who I am.
What?
The book is really ridiculous. It got turned into a Showtime show with Ethan Hawke and Daveed Diggs, and I just love that book so much. It was just such a good book. I love reading about and finding out more and more information about Harriet Tubman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was torn between this and another book idea that I had. And I had already been working on this as a play.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I could see this as a play. I actually have some original music that I really actually want you all to listen to.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I really want you to listen to. Even if we take a break and you listen, we come back and you are just all gushing over how brilliant I am as a musician.
I would love to.
As well as an author. But it was torn between this and this other book I did that I had, and I had already been working on this IP for the play. And I was like, I'm just going to turn this into a book.
Are you still going to possibly turn it into a play?
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
Okay. I love that.
It has been like 8 years in the making, this play. Wow. The book took me 4 years to write.
Okay.
Which I'm very embarrassed by because it's not a
book. Well, there's a lot of research in
the average time of a book being...
Books take a long time, I feel like.
Yeah.
I never hear, because I love books, I love reading, and I love authors. And
Are you like a physical book, or are you like a Kindle?
Physical book.
I like physical.
I have to read a physical book. I know the book, when we were planning for this podcast, the book wasn't released yet.
No.
And I was like, oh man, like, okay, I'll read it on like a...
My
like
phone.
Send a code or something to read it. And I was like bummed about that. And then there was a physical copy. I was like, sweet. And I read it in
a day. So did we send you guys this? Or did you guys like, we sent it over. Yeah, I got it.
Because I was so
happy.
There
are some Barnes & Noble that released it early. People were like,
it happens, yeah.
People are like, I have your book. I was like, what? How did you get my book? They're like, you like hacked the mainframe. They got like Wade and Kim Possible in there.
Yeah.
Hacking the mainframe.
I am just jealous of everybody who gets to hear you read it to them.
Well, I mean, that can be all of you because there's an audiobook. I recorded the audiobook, and the audiobook actually does have two original songs in it.
Ah, that's what I was wondering.
That I'm so proud of.
Are they the ones at the end?
Yeah.
Yes.
And let y'all know, like, so I've read books in my day. I don't read a ton of books. I read maybe like 1 to 2 books a year.
More than most.
Which is, especially more than most men. Actually, on average, women read like 6 books a year, and men on average read like 1 a year.
Mm-hmm. I was 0.
I mean,
I think like most people just
not Shane, though.
Read.
Shane reads a book like a week.
I love books.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Love them. I read this in a day. I was hooked.
I did also
read it in a
day.
It's an easy read because I'm not like ew, here for yonder does that with a break upon the dewy sky. Mm-hmm. Like I write the way I speak, so you can almost hear my voice when you just read
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And doing an audiobook, have any of y'all ever read an audiobook professionally? Like
no, that's what we want to ask
saying, like,
you.
I've read
doing
excerpts,
it.
And it is not easy.
Y'all,
it's hard.
Reading a book is one thing to yourself. Because you don't realize this. When you're reading, you're actually often skipping words.
Totally.
You're piecing sentences together. Your brain just kind of corrects it as it goes. Reading a book out loud, you feel like you're going crazy. Words stop meaning things.
Yep.
Have you ever been driving and then you realize
you're on the wrong side of the
freeway? You're just driving through a McDonald's? No.
Yeah.
Have you ever been driving and you were like, oh my God, I'm driving?
Yeah.
I'm driving. I've been driving for 15 minutes. What's going on? That's what it feels like when you're like, I've been reading for 40 pages. Where did I go?
Yeah.
And then it was also really emotional, too, because from the time that I started writing the book to the time I finished the audiobook, it had been 5 years. I've got to say, the last chapter of this book and the audiobook might be inaudible. I was crying I was like bawling because I was like, I can't believe I just wrote a book. I cannot believe I actually wrote and I finished. It's done. There's nothing else to do with this book besides promote it and beg people to buy it.
But the end chapter brings it all together so much. Even I was reading it, and I read it in a day and was feeling and when you read in a day, you're so connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine 5 years. But like reading the end, you were just like, it was like you were on a fucking roller coaster, like going up, and you're like, yes, here it comes, here it comes. Like, and I love the themes that you tied together with it. Like I just... And I also was like, Harriet Tubman is a real person out there today, right now.
Right?
I was like, I'm going to find
her. She exists.
I wrote the book to mimic what I imagined a journey to freedom on the Underground Railroad would be like. You know, it starts with the desire to go, and then the courage to take the first steps, and then the dangers on the journey, and then in the end, freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the book to mimic that. So the book is about Harriet Tubman coming back to life. She's returned. It's the return. A lot of people are coming back. Not just Harriet Tubman. A lot of people are coming back to life. Cleopatra's back. Abraham Lincoln is back. Frederick Douglass is back. Emily Dickinson is back. Although I didn't mention her in the book, but she is back. Okay. Just know that.
That's lore. That's canon.
Yeah. And in Harriet's return, she wants to continue her work as an abolitionist, but freedom is the goalpost for freedom has shifted now.
Mm.
And now she wants to continue her work by writing a hip hop album. Mm-hmm. She'll see, elicits the help of a former hip hop producer who's like pretty acclaimed with the Grammy Awards and some BET Awards and stuff. And but he's kind of out of the business for a while, but she wants him specifically to help her write this album. And he shows up, and he's also a big Harriet Tubman fan. Mm-hmm. So he shows up to help her write this album. And then on the journey, he realized that he has a journey toward freedom as well, mm-hmm. that she helps him with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you see yourself in Darnell? Did you see yourself in him?
So when I wrote, when I started the play, I was Harriet Tubman. When I wrote the play, I was going to play Harriet Tubman.
Amazing.
Because initially when I started the play, it was actually a concert. Kind of imagine Hedwig or Altar Boys, mm-hmm. or Lady Day at Emerson Bar and Grill. One of those where you go in and you're actually at a concert.
Yep.
That was the initial concept for the play. I tried to write that as a book. It was too hard for me, especially for my freshman novel. It'd be very hard to write that kind of book for me personally. So then I decided to make it about the creation of the album. So I created the character Darnell, and Darnell is very, very loosely based on me. Darnell is much nicer than I am. He's mm-hmm. much more meek than I am.
Yeah.
He is a version of me that probably I strive to be, but
it's
I'm
like a little piece of
yeah, but I'm a bit of an abrasive Brillo Patty type, and
that's why we like you.
Yeah, I'm more of a scrub daddy.
Love the scrub daddy,
because like so much of the book is the main character Darnell is a very like fearful character. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's very nervous, whereas you write Harriet Tubman, as I'm sure she was, like completely fearless.
Yeah,
just not second guessing herself for a second.
Well, you can't second guess yourself in these mm-hmm. scenarios, and she also demands that of the people around her. You know, she famously carried the Blicky. You know, she was carrying. Harriet carries the Blicky Tubman. Mm-hmm. And if you tried to turn back, she would, you know, if you turned around, you know, she would be like, you know, if you take a step back, that would be the last step you ever take. Mm-hmm. And that's not because she was just like such a badass. It's because if you turn back, you endanger everyone right. who's gone before you and mm-hmm. anyone who wants to come after you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you're on this journey, you have to have bravery beyond your own capacity even. Mm. And that's what I tried to reimagine. So obviously I'm imagining Harriet Tubman. This is, for all I know, Harriet Tubman might think this is the best book in the world. She might think it's a horrible book. I have no clue.
She will read it though.
She's
out in the world.
So, you know, I had to reimagine Harriet Tubman while also wanting her to be able to be human and not just this like idol. Because I always say Harriet Tubman is America's first black superhero. Like she mm-hmm. literally had superpowers. Like, I don't know if y'all know this, but she had like precognition. Like she could like, she would have these fainting spells you read in the book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She had like a trauma-induced brain injury where she would pass out.
Yeah.
Like she wouldn't be like,
like out cold.
No, yeah. Like body
yeah.
splayed.
Like, you know how Peter Griffin,
yeah,
yeah,
the famous,
I guess knocked out,
yeah, arm broken
for like hours at a time. But when she come to, she would have these visions that God would send her. Mm-hmm. And I'm not religious, but you know, obviously, the book has a lot yep. of my religious trauma in it too.
Yep.
And to her credit, she took about a dozen trips back and forth and was never caught one time.
That
which
is
wild.
Insane.
And the trips got further and further. It started going from Maryland to Pennsylvania, but then they passed the Fugitive Slave Act. And which means that any person who is free, who used to be enslaved, you are now a fugitive and you must be returned back to
right.
The people who technically own you. Mm. So then they started going all the way to Canada.
Mm-hmm. That is these outrageous. Journeys.
And she did all of this in her like late 20s, early 30s. She was roughly 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. She was disabled. She couldn't read. She could not write. But despite all of that, she was able to just... Mm-hmm. And, do it and, over and over again.
An unbelievable fact that I feel like isn't talked about enough in general, just in like education and stuff, is that she was the first woman to lead a military operation.
And with Trump's new DEI initiatives, it'll probably be another at least 4 years before we even get a chance to think about
yeah,
that.
Of course.
Real.
Everyone says she freed 1,000 slaves. It's actually probably close between 600 and 800. But a lot of people don't realize that like most of those were on the same day.
Wow.
That was during the Combahee River raids where they went to three plantations. So she had this plan. So they elicited her help because she knew the back roads and the woods better mm-hmm. than anyone. No one knew the swamps and the woods better than Harriet Tubman did. So she came up with this plan, this brilliant plan to go. She got some Union soldiers and some formerly enslaved people who had already been freed and who were working for the military to go to a plantation, free all the enslaved people there. And then give those enslaved people the opportunity to join them and raid the next plantation.
Whoa.
And then they went to the second plantation mm-hmm. with more than double the people, free all of those enslaved people.
Okay, Khaleesi.
Right?
She's just building and building and building.
And then she gave them the opportunity to join them mm-hmm. to raid the third plantation.
Damn.
All down the Combahee River raid, yeah.
Wow.
You know what I love so much, too? And I was thinking, I was like, is this a spoiler? No. It's fine. Is
spoiler
that,
alert. Spoiler possibly. Alert.
I loved so much towards the end of the book when she was like, I didn't deserve to be a slave. Like, I didn't want this. I mm-hmm. knew... I fought for it because I knew I deserved freedom.
Can I play a song for you?
Yes,
please.
Let's do it.
Oh my God, I'm so honored.
So I want to give you this. I want you to hear about this part of the song. So in the book, Harriet Tubman talks about the first time. This is like an account. All of Harriet Tubman's stories are just like secondhand because she couldn't mm-hmm. read, she couldn't write.
Right.
So we don't know for sure what Harriet Tubman said or did, but there are lots of historians who corroborate a lot of these things, this narrative, right? So Harriet Tubman, her youngest brother, his name is Moses, mm-hmm. which actually became one of her nicknames right. later yep. in life. And her name is actually Araminta. And then she took Harriet as her mother's name.
Oh, that's why Minty.
Yeah, Minty. Yeah, Araminta. That's what she was actually called Minty. That was actually her nickname. Ew. And then when she got to freedom, she changed her name to Harriet, which is her mother's name. So she saw her mother, Harriet, when a lot of her children had been taken away and sold to other plantations. It was quite common to break up these families. Mm-hmm. And when her youngest child, maybe Harriet Tubman's mom knew this would be her last child. I don't know. Or maybe she just was sick and tired of being sick and tired. But when Moses was born, she was like, they're not taking this. They're not going to take my child mm-hmm. away. Not this time. I cannot have any more of my children taken away from me. So they would get wind that a slaver would come to look at Moses to see if they wanted to have him. And then when Rhoda get back, they would hide him in the woods. They would hide him in other cabins. They would just move him around so they couldn't find him. Well, one time they just caught her off guard. Yeah. Harriet... as in Harriet Tubman's mother. Harriet had been caught off guard, and then next thing she knows, she looks up and Brodus, the slave owner, was standing there with another slaver who was trying to buy her child and sell him downstream. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to move further into the South,
right?
Because it gets stricter and stricter mm-hmm. and harder and harder. Mm-hmm. It was a man from Georgia. Georgia and Mississippi were known to have some of the harshest slavers in the Confederacy. Mm. You really don't want your kid to go to Georgia. So... she's caught at her front door, and she sees these two men, and she has this, like, club in their slave quarters that they would use for protection. And she just picked it up, and they're standing at the door, and then she says, allegedly, quote, anyone who sets foot in this house, I will crack your skull wide open. Mm-hmm. And incredible. So everyone's freezing because they're like, oh, my God, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. First of all, women can't threaten men. Mm-mm. Not in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Also, black people can't threaten white people. So a black woman certainly cannot threaten two white men. Yep. One of them who legally owns you and the other one who's looking to purchase your child. Mm. But for some reason, they just left. They just said, okay. They turned around and they just left and she got to keep her child. So ooh. This was a huge moment for Harriet Tubman when she realized, like, oh, now I see that... there are other options out there.
Yep.
So now that you have that in mind, I wrote this song about Harriet Tubman telling that story and how it impacted her, the way that she sees herself mm-hmm. and her options. All right, this is the best song I've ever written. I'm so proud of the song.
Okay.
She was standing in the doorway, her sweat like rain. The epiphany of her daughter helped her mask her pain. She was a woman at her wit's end. She finally awoken. My mama might have been big, but she could never be broken. She had a dance with the devil, and mama got the upper hand. And finally, it's something I could truly understand.
Yes!
Thank you.
That was gorgeous.
That was incredible. That was
epic. I'm so glad you played it, because when you're thinking about it, you don't have the music, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah, so
the singing.
That's why I'm excited. Like in the audiobook, the songs will cut in, like, just they're not at the end. They're actually they're put throughout. into the there's only two songs, but they're put in like the appropriate places when those songs were written. So again, I'm just like, I'm so proud of this. It's a huge departure for me. It's not as slapstick and silly as some stuff I've done. There is humor in it because the concept itself is absurd.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. The idea is absurd. And there is certainly comedy, because there's a bit of comedy in every single thing I do. I don't think I can do anything. I mean, when my mom passed away, a friend of mine, Zach Noe Towers, called me, and he was like, he and I, we kind of like jab each other all the time back and forth. And he was just, you know, he was really being sincere. And he was like, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know. And I was like, there is something you could do, please quit comedy. like, even in those moments. So yes. There's always going to be a bit of humor in every single thing I do, every single time. But that being said, you know, I want people to know, like, this book is not written, like, it's not an SNL sketch.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
There are fun moments, but it's also not trauma porn. It's not like The Color Purple, which, by the way, is literally my favorite book of all time. Mm-hmm. But it's not like, you know, Roots or... It's not like a, there's no like stories of like lashings and all this stuff. It is, it happens today. It's happening current time. So when you read this book, just know that don't expect like, you know, like a lot of people say, like jokingly ask me, there was a drag queen named Simone who played Harriet Tubman on RuPaul's Drag Race for Snatch Game. Like, it's not Snatch Game. It's not Simone as Harriet Tubman. It's not, but also it's not like as intense as like, you know, LeVar Burton in playing Kunta Kinte. But it's somewhere in the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not slice of life, but it's still like, this is happening right now in this moment. If you could imagine Harriet Tubman coming back now to a hip hop producer and is like, I want you to do an album. That made me laugh. Just in general.
That concept is funny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she's just standing there with her coffee and I'm just like, this just makes me laugh.
Yeah, writing the way Harriet Tubman drinks coffee is actually one of my favorite
parts. No, she keeps blowing on her coffee in between sentences. I felt that when I was reading it. I'm like, it was the way you used dialogue and how I'm like, I'm reading stuff that like is really dark history, like really tough stories that happened to real people, but the way you tell it is like, I feel like it was such a breezy read, and I felt like I was learning so much in a casual way. It felt like your friend was telling you this story.
Well, the truth is, we have been so desensitized to the trauma of Black people in America. Right. I remember it just kind of dawned on me one day. So I'm from Atlanta, and we probably take Black History Month a little more seriously than other places do. Mm-hmm. Atlanta is a very Black city, and Georgia has a very dark history with racism and chattel slavery. The KKK had one of their first meetings right outside of Atlanta, a place called Stone Mountain. So we have a lot of history with racism and you know, a very troubled past. Mm-hmm. So we take it pretty intensely there. And then I got so used to hearing these stories and seeing these things, and then seeing, you know, Black bodies mutilated and beaten and hanged in my books, that it kind of just became like, yeah, that's just what I see in my books. And I was listening to This American Life, which is my favorite podcast, actually.
I love that podcast.
Next to Smosh Mouth.
very good. Please.
There's
very
a similar category, good. You know.
Please. There was this story about this school here in L.A. that went on a field trip to go see Schindler's List. It was a Black high school. They went to go see Schindler's List. Mm. And it's a pretty heavy movie for high schoolers to watch. And obviously, you know, kids get really uncomfortable with situations like that. And they laughed at one point during the movie. This group of Black kids laughed during this point in the movie. And it was like someone fell in a way that was like they were uncomfortable and they responded by laughing. Mm-hmm. And then other patrons in the movie theater were upset. And then somehow this high school full of Black kids had been labeled anti-Semitic.
Oh, okay.
And it became a massive story. I don't know if any of you remember this. It was so big that Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was the governor at the time, came to the high school to have a chat. It was so big that Steven Spielberg, who directed the movie, came to the school to have a chat about anti-Semitism to these high school kids. It was a massive, massive story.
I feel like I remember hearing.
And then at one point, one of the kids stood up and was like, well, when are we going to get to hear our story? Mm-hmm. When are we going to get to hear our story? Who's going to write our story? And oddly enough, a few years later, Steven Spielberg directed Amistad. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I guess your story should be heard. I don't know that he was the one who should have been telling it. But
Right, exactly.
But I mean, Steven Spielberg loves telling
Black stories. He was like, I was there.
I mean, he loves telling Black stories. He directed Color Purple.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's insane to me.
Yeah, Steven Spielberg directed Color Purple. But I will say, it's a brilliant film.
It's a really good
That
movie.
Being said, it's a really brilliant film. So it's just like, you know, hearing these stories and being desensitized to them, especially where I came from, and then seeing it juxtaposed to people who are like, I don't hear a lot of our stories, was really interesting to me. And I did not want this to be Amistad. I didn't want this to be Schindler's List. I didn't want this to be, because those stories are great and they're brilliant. They're told. Right. I wanted it to be an opportunity for people to learn about Harriet Tubman, my favorite veteran of all. Do we have veterans that we love? My favorite veteran. Do we have like veteran trading cards?
Should.
Harriet Tubman, who is like, and also that so many Americans have to directly to thank for a lot of the liberties that they have today. Particularly Black people and women have, so sorry that you're not included in this one.
Yeah, it's okay.
So,
he's fine.
I think I'll be all right.
He can handle this.
Have so much to thank Harry Tubman for. You know, I go on tangents. So
I'm enjoying it.
I was in Selma, Alabama doing an episode of We're Here. And I had this really, like, this, like, survivor guilt moment that was, like, fucking with me. I was, like, I broke down and started crying so bad. It's all on camera. Mm-hmm. I was sitting with foot soldiers from the Edmund Pettus Bridge on Bloody Sunday who actually were actually there. And this and then I was in this room. It's, like, this experience that you have in this place in Selma, Alabama where you go through a slave ship. Like, they built this space to emulate what it's like to be on a slave ship. Doing the transatlantic slave trade. So I had that guilt to be like, my God, like someone had to go through so much so that I could be here today.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
And a lot of these people were not choosing to go. It's not like people were like, I'm marching. They were just like, you know, I'm just doing my thing and I've been snatched off the west coast of Africa. Mm-hmm. And then talking to this one woman who was telling a story about how she had been beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And at one point she was kicked so hard by this cop that she was airborne. Like he kicked her literally into the air. This man kicked her when she was like 19 or 18 years old. And then she was saying that she had seen footage of it that she had never seen before. Like she was like almost 70. She had never seen this footage once in her life. And it made her quite emotional. So then I became quite emotional. Mm. And I had this like guilt of like, the long and short of it is like, someone went through all these things.
Right.
And here I am telling dick jokes. You know what I mean? But the truth is, you know, people fought for these rights so that I can sit here and tell dick jokes. And I know that sounds absurd.
No, that's what you wrote in your book.
To have the freedom to tell my fucking dick jokes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
To tell my fart jokes. You know what I mean? And also to pave a path for people down the line to do whatever it is they want to do, whether it is, you know, if they want to march, if they want to write, if they want to sing, if they want to be lawyers, if they want to be couch potatoes. Mm-hmm. You know, just to have the right to be able to do that.
Yeah, I feel like that really comes through in the story. And like, I totally see where you're coming from and how you wanted to write it, because as an entertainer, like you naturally are an escape for people to like just laugh. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that.
And I love to laugh. Right. That's my favorite.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I love
it. I don't enjoy it.
It's so fun.
Not for me.
I hate laughing.
Not for me.
I was really amazed because it's a roughly like 220 pages, mm-hmm. how much you packed into it, because I felt like I learned so much mm-hmm. in it. And something that I thought was amazing that you talked about is, I think when we talk about this history, we go like, well, that was how it was back then. Like everybody like agreed, but you talk about all the people who were actively fighting against it for so long mm-hmm. that we kind of dismiss, and then it all gets kind of brought to like Abraham Lincoln. And it's like, oh, Abraham Lincoln did this. And it's like,
I loved your take on Abraham Lincoln.
So many people.
I loved your hot take on Abraham. I was like,
not that hot of a take. I mean,
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, I guess it's not a super hot take. Abraham Lincoln was not an abolitionist. A lot of people think that Abraham Lincoln was an abolitionist. Abraham Lincoln wanted to punish the South. And he was like, well, hit them where it hurts, right in their pockets. Take away their free labor. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if I'm pretty sure about this in the book. Abraham Lincoln's idea to end racism was like, just get rid of black people.
Yeah, push them
Yeah,
out.
He's like, just send them somewhere else.
He's like, if you get rid of black people, no one will be racist.
What a good solution.
Which is crazy.
Yeah,
and I believe it was Frederick Douglass who was like, no.
I also love Frederick Douglass. I love the way that you created
like
these characters.
There's slight beef between Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman.
I enjoyed that. And then he's there at the end, just like sitting there.
And then we can maybe not put this in if it's a spoiler on the story or not. But do you like to think of like there was some kind of chemistry between Harriet Tubman and James Brown? Was the
No. Harriet Tubman was a very faithful woman to her husband. Well, she had two husbands. You know, one of her husbands she left because he wasn't prepared to take the journey in the way that she was prepared to take the journey. So she remarried. Ooh. So Harriet Tubman is a very, very faithful woman. But and John Brown is a man of extreme faith as well.
Yeah.
John Brown, he would never
a
in a million
character.
Years. But they did have a lot of reverence for each other. Like, you know, I have friends that I have talent crushes on, You know what
right.
I mean?
Ocean.
Ocean Kelly is a friend of mine that I have. He's my drag daughter, actually. Kevin Antunes, who actually we all wrote those songs together, actually. And, you know, I have Mikey Angelo, another friend of mine. I have like talent crushes on.
Yeah.
I think that John Brown and Harriet Tubman had a
talent crush.
Like a talent crush, like for their, you know, their penchant for freedom and abolition.
That's
because
awesome.
They did it in very different ways. So if y'all don't know John Brown is one of the craziest abolitionists in the history of America. He would straight up ask you, are you pro-slavery or are you free state? And if you gave the wrong answer, those might literally be the last
he
words
might
you
kill
ever
you
say in
right
your life.
There.
I mean, literally, he would kill you then and there. On the spot, he was absolutely insane. And he felt like he was convicted by God. You can't...
Yeah.
When someone feels like I have divine... on my side.
There's nothing you
I
can do.
I have a divine right. What are you earthly beings going to do to me? I mean, he famously once took a judge from his home in the middle of the night and murdered him in a field for judging against slaves. Like, this man did not play games. He was the first Luigi Mangione.
Oh, my God. But he wasn't as cute.
He wasn't as cute because
your description of him, I was like, woo.
John Brown was no shade, an ugly man.
I can't believe I said James Brown. No, you said John Brown.
It's okay.
It's okay.
But you managed to talk about all of these historical figures. Not all of them appear in the book, but you just talk about them. And I love how detailed and like so humanized these historical figures. Because sometimes when we read history, it's just like a page on a book, and we kind of remove all the like human parts of these people. Mm-hmm. And I felt like you painted such a beautiful picture of all of them.
Yeah, I was like, Harriet Tubman, you know, she's an older woman who lives in... I was like, what am I saying?
Mm-hmm. No, Harriet Tubman, when she was doing what she was doing, she was very, very young.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there are not a lot of pictures of Harriet Tubman when she was very young, because when she was doing what she was doing, she had to operate in secret.
Right.
So Harriet Tubman didn't become known until well after. Like, it was imperative that no one know who Harriet Tubman is,
right,
for her to be able to do the work that she was doing.
Yeah, I mean, even in the book, she's like stating how people didn't know if she was a woman or not.
Yeah.
People didn't even, she was kind of a myth.
People thought she was like a ghost.
Legend.
Which is kind of epic. Like,
yeah, Harriet Tubman is more major than major. Yeah. Like, she's insanely smart. She was incredibly, her ingenuity, just her social skills, her leadership skills were off the charts, unmatched. She will go down unmatched for a very long time, for sure.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
So you're saying this could still be a play one day?
Fingers crossed it will be a play
one
day.
I think so. And then would you still want to play Harriet Tubman?
No, so I see myself as Darnell now.
Yeah.
When I wrote this character, I see myself as Darnell. Also, it is important to me physically that Harriet Tubman be a very tiny woman, because it really shows
that.
it shows the intensity of this tiny look, because she was a very small lady, and I make it a point to illustrate how small she is in the book, because it goes to show how much power she was able to wield. You know Men in Black? Are you familiar with Men in Black?
Of course. Yeah.
Remember the cricket?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
She is the cricket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This tiny gun that has so much fucking power behind it. So I have a dream cast, and I've already said it out loud, so I might as well just go ahead and say it. One day in my brain, maybe when it's a movie, she will stoop to our level. But in my brain, one day I would love to have Dochi play Harriet Tubman.
Wow.
That is
wow.
Like,
sick.
A stoop.
Okay.
That's incredible.
That's my dream cast. One day Dochi will be Harriet
that
Tubman.
That would be fucking mind-blowing.
Right, and Dochi, if you're listening, let me send you this
she
music.
She listens to us.
Dochi loves Smosh Mouth.
She's obsessed.
She's obsessed with Smosh Mouth. She
we
loves
know
everything
you're watching.
We've discussed.
You're in the comments
she
section.
She keeps wanting to be on the show, and we're like, Dochi, we don't have time.
She loves what we discuss.
Maybe three more Grammys, and then we'll allow you to be on the show.
That's awesome.
Once you get as many Grammys as Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah. Come on.
Who would you cast as Dr. Slim?
Oh my God. Okay, in my dream.
We were talking about that this morning. Yeah. We were like,
in my mind, Dr. Slim looks almost exactly like Wiz Khalifa.
I said that.
You said that. We were driving. I was like, who do you think Dr. Slim is?
I listened to Wiz Khalifa so much in high school.
Yeah.
In 2010. I
was
Wiz
Khalifa for sure.
2010 Wiz Khalifa.
Hey, did y'all see the Emily Dickinson TV show?
No, I hear it's incredible.
So Wiz Khalifa was on that show, and he played Death in that show.
Oh, wow.
And he's a pretty good actor too. He's a pretty good actor. And I think Wiz Khalifa is a really cool cat.
He's a huge fan of
Hot
Smosh
take.
Mouth as
also,
well.
Also, he's actually sitting right next to Dochi.
Yeah, they are both watching it together, drinking tea.
Yeah, just being like. But yeah, so I in my mind, I would be playing Darnell. Mm-hmm. Doki would be playing Harriet Tubman.
Incredible.
Wiz Khalifa would be playing
Dr. Slim. Who would play Moses?
In my dream world, I have the whole cast laid out. In my dream world, Peter Dinklage would be playing DJ Quakes.
Incredible.
Because a lot of people don't know this. So DJ Quakes is based on a real person, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that Benjamin Lay is indeed a real person. Mm-hmm. He was another abolitionist who was he's a little person. He was from London or from Britain, and then he moved to the States to live in Philadelphia, but he was kind of thrown out of his ministry. He was a Quaker because he was too radical. Mm-hmm. His most radical thing he ever did was he once stole someone's baby.
That's
a real story.
That story was wild.
He was talking to a slaver, and he was like, it must be really hard to lose your child. Like, it must be hard on the slaves. And the slave was like, why is that so hard? And he was like, okay.
We'll see.
He was like, bet.
I'll leave the baby with my wife, so the baby's fine.
And then he stole the baby.
Yeah.
And he let them freak out for like 2 weeks or so. And then once he was panicked, he was like, here's your baby. Oh, so you mean it is actually hard. Interesting. Very interesting. So abolitionists were wild back then. Mm-hmm. That would be... Peter Dinklage. In my mind, Moses, I have to remember his name because I also kind of have a crush on him. He's so hot.
Talent crush or crush?
No, crush. But he's not.
I love the idea of a talent crush, though, because I totally have.
But he's not gay, though. And I rarely ever have anything interest in this.
Oh, I wonder if it's, I wonder if I've clocked it. I think I know.
In my mind, Moses would be played by, Lakeith Stanfield.
Okay.
Who do you think?
I was thinking of another actor, but Lakeith Stanfield is one of my favorite actors. I love him so much.
Was he played in?
He was in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He was also in Sorry to Bother You.
Oh my God, I literally follow him on Instagram. I love him.
He was
Jesus' brother.
Yeah. I was about to say, like,
Book of Clarence.
Yeah.
He was Clarence. Not Jesus' brother. He was like another Jesus type.
He's so cool.
In Book of Clarence, yeah.
That would be great. Moses.
Yeah, that would be Moses.
I see it.
And Buck would be played by, this is obviously impossible because he's passed away, but it's like a Michael Clark Duncan type, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yep.
You describe him in the book as if Michael Clark Duncan ate Michael Clark Duncan.
Yes.
Which was, I highlighted that line because it made me laugh so hard.
Bing Rames could be a good, Buck. And in my mind, Odessa is, her name is not Olivia Pope. That's not her name. Kerry Washington.
Oh, okay. My God.
Okay, yeah.
That's a great cast.
Good.
But also Zendaya, who I'm obviously a huge fan of.
Yes.
Odessa and Buck, are they based on real folks?
No, they're made up. Okay. They're just people made up. Odessa is actually a town in Texas.
Okay.
Okay.
That I always thought was a pretty name.
It is a pretty name. Yeah. I really liked that character. It kind of, there's a scene in the book where Darnell takes Odessa to a restaurant and Odessa's just enjoying this meal. And like, it was just a scene that was like, we get so caught up in the weirdest everyday issues that we forget like the real things that can be going on.
Yeah, for sure.
I really liked that scene a lot.
And I love the idea of Odessa walking around Harlem and like having fun. And you know, Darnell's taking her. He's like, yeah, you just cross. And she's like, oh, like, you know, cars are moving. She's kind of like, you know, it's a little Encino Man. it is a little Encino
Man. Nice reference.
I love your references right now.
Oh, thank you.
So good.
Do you think you'll write more books in the future?
I already have the next book in this installment. And I'm happy to
say
what
it is. In this installment.
Yes.
In the same universe.
World building. So the next book is called Jesus Christ for President.
Hell yes.
Incredible.
All right.
And Jesus Christ is running for president, and shocker, conservatives don't like his politics.
No.
Really?
Shocker.
That's a spoiler.
Conservatives do not like his politics.
This is amazing.
They're like, oh my God, who's this Palestinian guy?
Fair?
And he's like, I'm Jesus Christ. Jesus. Maybe you've heard of me.
Yeah.
I love this.
Well, let's keep the book on display. Oh, don't you?
Yeah,
like
yes,
that?
Yes, yes, sorry.
Keep her pretty.
When I was torn between, I'll tell you the other book that I have that has nothing to do with this world, that I was torn between with this
and the
other book. It was, this book is called The Last White Person on Earth.
Great.
Now, the concept of this book is, in a world, there are no more, like, races.
Uh-huh.
Like, races don't exist. There are no black people. There are no white people. There are no Asian people. Everyone is Zendaya. Everyone is...
You really love Zendaya.
Zendaya is a black woman. I want to be very clear. Zendaya is a black woman. That was a bit. But everyone is brown. Everyone is multiracial.
Uh-huh.
Everyone is this, like, racially ambiguous brown color, right? This is the one world order. This is a government mandate. You cannot be more than 50% of any race. You legally cannot be. This was Abraham Lincoln's mission. Just get rid of all the people, all the races, mm-hmm. and there will be no more racism.
Yeah.
So in this world that I've built, that I've created in my head, I've not even written a single page. There's a tribe of white people who have hidden in the woods of Alabama. and they are the last white people on earth. Mm-hmm. And the government's like, we got to go get them. Mm-hmm. They can't be down there. We told you, you can't be white. So you go in and you get them and they kill all the white people. A dream. And I'm kidding.
Everyone clapped.
And the book is over.
Done. No.
They kill all the white people. And then there's one soldier and he finds this baby. There's just a little white baby. And everyone else is dead, and he's like, I can't kill this baby. He puts the baby in his rucksack, and he just goes about his business. He goes home. And now you're in a world where people have never seen a white person, a black person, an Asian person. Everyone is brown. Mm-hmm. And then he shows his baby, and everyone's like, oh, my God, I never seen a white person. This is crazy. And then it becomes, what do I do with this baby? Like, what do you do with this, the last white person on earth?
And it's a baby.
And it's a baby. You can't raise the baby because the baby will do what white people do. They will make more white people, and they'll go white. Yeah. They'll spread. They'll spread.
We do that.
They'll spread. And they're like, you can't kill this baby because it's just a baby. Mm-hmm. This is a baby. How can you kill? Like, you know, what white people have there, they learn that. Mm-hmm. There are no white people here to teach him what it is. So then there's like a trial. Then the whole world is like on edge about the deciding what to do about the last white person mm-hmm. on earth. I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do.
So good.
But I love that.
It's kind of like the Jungle Book. It's loosely based on Jungle Book where like, you know, Shere Khan's like, we can't have this man cub.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there can't, he'll do what men do. You cannot let him, you cannot allow him to live among us because he's going to hunt us. He does. Mm. But of course, Shere Khan is traumatized.
Right.
You know, Shere Khan if you've seen Jungle Book, he's afraid of fire for a good reason. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's loosely based on Jungle Book. And this little white kid is Mowgli.
Yeah,
I love it.
That's incredible.
I feel like that'd be an awesome TV show.
But his name won't be Mowgli. It'll be like Theron.
Yeah, I was like, it can't be Mowgli. Theron.
Brandlin.
Yeah. Drake.
Yeah. Brayden.
Todd.
What do we do with baby Brayden?
Ethan.
Bob, before we go, we had some quickfire questions that we wrote out that we mm-hmm. wanted to ask you.
They're
okay?
special to us.
They're special to us. They are,
I'm all ears.
They're all about Smosh-related stuff.
Gang.
Okay. This one's about us?
Well, they're all kind of like related.
Play about us.
The Real Housewife one? Okay. Would you rather
argue? This is not
argue,
very rapid, I want to say.
Would you rather?
Yeah,
I know.
So, okay.
We're going to do this slow. Would you rather argue with a Real Housewife or an 11-year-old on Dress to Impress?
I have argued with a Real Housewife, and I got to say, it's really fun. I love
saw your Dorinda back
riling
and forth.
Up the housewives, and I
so
do
funny.
It again. Bop, bop,
yeah,
bop.
Yeah,
love
that
it.
Was awesome.
Name three adjectives that describe a margarita.
Zesty.
Okay.
Tangy. Boozy.
Wow. Zesty, tangy, boozy.
Incredible.
Those are good.
Can animatronics be sexy?
100%. For sure. I kind of have a crush on the Avatar creatures.
Oh, me
yeah.
too.
Oh,
of course.
Disney
They're
World?
Kind of hot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The one at Disney World.
My Hear Me Out
tank?
is the Avatar creatures.
Oh, love fair.
Yeah,
very
and there's an animatronic, you know. I want to what is it?
Animatronic.
What do you call it? Anatomically correct animatronic. You do with that information.
Yep.
Whoa. do you eat cereal?
And not often, but I do like cereal. My favorite cereal is Apple Jacks.
Oh, solid
okay.
choice. Good. Solid choice.
Hands down.
Submissive or breedable?
Me specifically?
Yes.
Or preference-wise?
Preference, I'd say.
Whatever. Preference. Okay, preference.
I'm submissive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love it.
And then last one, we actually wrote down, have you played Werewolf and would you play it with us? But you already...
I've never played Werewolf, but okay. I've played Mafia.
You'll be fine.
I've sure. played Blood on the Clock Tower.
Oh, then you're
and
fine.
And I was
fine.
Cast on the show The Traitors.
Okay. Yes,
the resume is stacked. You're going to be
I think
fine.
You're ready.
You're
going to
be
ready.
Just fine.
The door is wide open if you ever want to play Werewolf.
Literally.
I want to go back and say... Submissive and breedable.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We need to go back for that.
Okay,
one.
So
that.
You're gonna play werewolf with us, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm cutthroat.
When you have a fine. Spare moment, sometime in the
you
next
can teach
few
us
years.
A thing or two.
Well, listen, y'all. I'm busy, but I'm easy.
Okay.
You're busy, but you're easy. We
I'm
love
busy
that.
Because I say yes to everything.
Yeah. I feel like that's so true based on just like everything you've done.
I'm everywhere.
You are.
You know, once I was in this last story, my ex broke up with me. which is valid and fair. We were great together. But the day he broke up, like a month later, there was this giant billboard. You know the tall wall?
Yeah, yeah.
If you drive down Sunset, it's like 9100 Sunset. It's like a huge building. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the biggest.
Sure.
I was on like the tall wall.
Hell yeah.
Which is like he can see from his home.
Oh. And
I was like, baby, you will never get rid of me.
Oh my God. Good morning.
That's incredible.
I love that.
Every day. Wow.
Well, we got to go, but Bob, thank you so much.
Thank you. If you guys want to get my book, you can go to readthedragqueen.com. That is readthedragqueen.com. If you want a signed copy of my book, you can go to bobsignedbook.com. And yeah, and again, you go to readthedragqueen.com. You can also get the audiobook there as well.
Audiobook, and it's you reading it.
Can I say something real quick? Listen,
yeah.
Hear me out, y'all. This is my soft pitch, okay? Times are tough. I know this. If you have an Amazon Prime account, you get one free audiobook a month. I don't know if you guys know this. Just make it mine. If you have a Spotify premium account, you get 10 free hours of audiobook every month. Do people know that?
No.
I actually didn't know that.
My book is only 5.5 hours.
There you go.
You can listen to my book.
And something
and then the,
else.
And then the first 10% of Wicked.
There you go.
And there's nothing better than when the author reads their own book as an audiobook. So,
I agree.
And it being Bob the Drag Queen, no less, is awesome.
And those songs will be in it
in real time.
Yeah, that's incredible to me. That's like so like new. I feel like that's not super common. I'm so stoked for everybody who gets to hear that for the first time.
It's good music. It's really good music. I'm really proud
really,
of it.
Really, really good.
Yes, I feel that.
All
We're
right.
so honored to have you.
Thank you.
Seriously,
I'm happy to be here. It was a real pleasure.
You are incredible. You really are.
All right. All right.
All right.
See you guys later.
Bye.
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 One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.